Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Absolutely emphatic.
And Jay Demerit. Oh, yes. Luther Pissett. That's a spectacular goal.
And Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal.
And the goal. Sensational.
And it's there.
Again, would you believe it?
Welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name's Matt Messiano, and I'm joined by Jordan Weimer and Tom Burdell to discuss the Easter double Desmond 2-2 for those of you that don't play poker. Well, where should we start then? I suppose you know it's been a little while, guys. How did your Easters pan out?
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks, mate.
you sound really happy.
You sound like you had a great Easter. Yeah.
I think I got a great. Well, maybe I'm a little bit fatigued. This is the Easter hangover, I guess, is in full swing. So maybe that's what it is. It was good. It was good, and good to have plenty of football. What the stuff mixed. So yeah,
is Easter different in Canada? What sort of traditions do they have over there?
I think very similar. To be honest with you, I wish I had something to say that was a little bit more unique, but I think along the same lines, you know. Very, very similar, not too much different. There's still chocolate, there's still plenty of football.
And you definitely partake in the chocolate because you're a fit guy. I imagine you're probably thinking, oh, I don't know if I want the chocolate.
No, I don't.
Does that fit into my normal habits?
I don't worry about it. I'm good. If it's there, I'm not going to say no. So we all have our weaknesses, Matt.
We do. What's your weakness, Tom?
Oh, Diet Coke, obviously. To be fair, I do like a bit of chocolate as well, actually.
Is that your weakness?
Sweet tooth. I'm much more... I would say so.
Okay.
I'm much more of a sort of sweet tooth over like a savoury snack. Like, I'm sure I've said this on the pod, but if I haven't, I absolutely detest crisps. Like, they make me physically sick, the idea of crisps. So...
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. So, when people have crisps as their kind of weakness, my equivalent would be a bit of chocolate or sweets or something. So yes, that's probably the answer. Not that I got much chocolate at all for Easter, because being 30, nearly 32, people don't tend to give you chocolate, do they? Just sort of go, oh, it's Easter, move on.
Just a couple of Diet Cokes.
Yeah, exactly. I wish.
How many Diet Cokes a day?
Well, I'm worried about this. I think I should probably cut back, because I recently discovered that there's not got caffeine in it. It's got caffeine flavouring.
Eh?
Check it out on the back of a can. Certainly in this country, it's caffeine flavouring. What does caffeine taste like? Who knows? But
so you're enabling yourself.
Yeah. My thinking has always been, oh, you know, stop at kind of a sensible time so that you don't struggle to get to sleep. And then recently, I just like, well, sod it. I'll just drink as much as I please because there's no caffeine in it. And actually, it's probably, you know, healthy for me to have a bit of a cut off anyway, because I do drink too much regardless. So there's a really boring insight into my terrible life.
What, how many a day are we talking? I'm just curious now.
No, we're talking six plus a day, I would say.
Oh, six.
Six a day.
Yeah.
That's a lot, Tom. What a noise
that was, by the way. Oh, six. Surely we've covered this before. People always stagger. But no, yeah, that's...
Well, I've heard you say you've had a Coke before when you're on the podcast, but I didn't notice it. What about aspartame? Does aspartame not bother you?
Well, funnily enough, when I was in secondary school, I did a science paper on, I wrote a paper on it, as in an exam paper on, on science, I guess. And that was one of the questions. It was about aspartame. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of it. And I was like, shit me, this sounds not great, right? It's like kills your brain cells. But look, that was 15 years or so ago. I'm still here. I'm arguably as intelligent as ever, or stupid as ever. It depends if you're a glass half full, glass half empty of Diet Coke kind of guy. So, no, I guess it doesn't bother me as much as it should. I
think where you could have been, though, Tom.
Yeah, there is one way of looking at it. But I don't think I've... I don't know. I don't feel any different. I don't feel like it's impacted me. I hope it hasn't.
Well, yeah. No, fair enough. Fair enough.
What about you, Matt? Anything you want to get off your chest?
Well, unlike Tom, I love crisps, and I think probably crisps is the thing that I need to cut out more than the chocolate. Oh, to be honest, yeah, I'd probably take a bag of crisps over a chocolate bar if given.
So you two are like polar opposites, then.
Yeah, I guess so. But that's probably why we come together and work so well, because we have opposites attract,
yeah, and all.
Exactly.
Well, exactly.
Don't feel too bad, though, about the six, because I've met several people, Tom, who basically just don't drink water, which I couldn't understand. I couldn't believe that people like that exist. And they only drink Coke.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Water is my second favourite drink.
You know, oh, good. That's good.
Yeah, water is my second favourite. I drink a lot of water. I just drink a lot in a day. Like, I need to be, I'm a hydrated guy. I need to be hydrated. So I get up, I have a liquid vitamin C, you know, soluble tablet. I have a pint of water with that. I then have a litre bottle, you know, Chili's bottle that I carry around with me everywhere. I get through a couple of those before lunch. Then I get onto the Coke until about 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening. And after that, I'll just have like squash and water. So I drink a hell of a lot.
Do you have to keep moving like a shark as well?
Something like that, yeah. Something like that. I have a really low heart rate as well. Sharks, that like their heart beats like once a month or something, doesn't it? So. Maybe I am part shark.
This is explaining a lot. I'm getting a lot of insight into the makeup of your character.
I can't believe we've never covered.
I guess we've not.
The fact that I have a Diet Coke addiction.
No,
guys seriously just thought I quite like a Diet Coke, like it.
Yeah, I thought it was like your podcast thing. You had a Coke during the pod, and I was like, yeah, standard Tom pod.
On the water thing, I was having this conversation the other day, and I was actually quite disappointed in my mum for this. But I feel like I was one of those kids that now water is the only thing I drink in the day, unless I'm having like a beer or something. But like as a child, I feel like I always drank squash. Like squash is what you drank. Like a glass of water felt. Like we just never drank water as a kid. Like it's so strange now as an adult to think between the ages of like what as young as I can remember to being like an early teenager. The thought of just drinking water kind of, I didn't even like the thought of it. I just drank squash. It's just so.
But surely the difference between squash and water is quite negligible, right? I mean, it's...
When you're a child, though, you just drink what's in front. You drink what you're given. You just kind of learn what you're given. Yeah. So,
I guess.
If you're listening, Mum, thanks for that.
Well, everyone listening in, I think that's 8 minutes now, and we haven't mentioned football once. That could be a new record. It might get cut down. If you're looking at this being like, it's only been 3 minutes, you'll be like, oh, Matt's clearly had to cut a lot of this out.
The intervention buzz has been good so far.
It's very interesting. Right, should we get to the football then? Because we've had two really good games over the Easter period. One on Good Friday, one on Good Monday. But were either of them good? Ha-ha. Well, to be fair, I think we'll be pretty happy with the results. But let's pose the question. Tom? A pair of tutus. Were you happy?
Yeah. I think so. I think in the circumstances of kind of the way these nine games were laid out, that we obviously knew the Birmingham game was viewed as being carrying a great deal of importance because of what was to come after it, and expectations for those games were particularly low, certainly for the Leeds game, I think, and West Brom obviously in the playoffs and look pretty good this year. So I think you have to be pretty happy. Obviously, you scratch beneath the surface and say, well, until late in both games, we were winning and have only come away with 2 points rather than six. I think if we'd come away with 9 points from Tom Cleverley's first three games, we'd be cock-a-hoop. But it's the life of a football fan, isn't it? To be kind of kept, you know, not allowed to get too above your station.
How about you, Jordan? Happy with the 2-2s?
Yeah, in some ways. I think if you just look at the results, yes. I think, you know, they both felt a little bit deflating because of the manner of the results, the way they came about. But, yeah, you know, there were some positives to take away. I think it's been slightly more interesting, especially in the West Brom game too. At least there's more entertainment than what we'd seen in recent weeks prior. So, yeah, I enjoyed the games for the most part. And that's more than I think a lot of us could have said for the last few weeks.
Yeah. We spoke about Tom Cleverley after the Birmingham game, but we didn't really have much to say because we didn't have much data. We've now had the three games now. Perhaps a bit more time to have a look at what a Watford side under Tom Cleverley looks like. Jordan, there's been a notable switch to a 3-5-2. Did you see that one coming? And how's it panning out?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty good. Yeah, I think in terms of seeing it coming, I think it was... I don't remember if we talked about it or not when we were kind of debating what he would do shape-wise. But, yeah, I mean, there's always potential. You know, I think there's... If you're taking over a team that's you know, struggling a little bit, you want to be a little bit more conservative. It gives you flexibility to do that. Also, on the other end, too, you can be more offensive. So it's kind of a flexible formation, right? So, yeah, we've got some experience in those central positions, too. There's some players might want to utilise. Obviously, look at Hoot and so on and... Serialta and even Porteous is kind of coming into his own a little bit more in recent weeks too. So yeah, I think it's actually looked quite good though. You know, I think in terms of back threes, we've seen a lot over the last decade at Watford. A lot of coaches have come in and played that system or similar or variants of a back three, back five. And oftentimes we've had some very similar issues that have plagued us. And I think so far early on, we've actually taken to it pretty well, I'd say. You know, we don't look particularly stuck in possession. Even when Hoot was out as well, we still didn't look overly stuck in possession. The wing backs are doing a pretty good job. We'll get onto Lewis, I'm sure, but I think Andrews has done really well there. The midfield works quite well for it. You know, quite a mobile, industrious midfield. I think we've got to see some real positives and some, you know, really good play come out of the likes of Tondele Bashiru, and a little bit of a different look up front too. So I think it's worked quite nicely for us. So far.
Do you think, Tom, that it's been hiding some of the defensive aspects of our wing-backs or even full-backs game, the 3-5-2, allowing their strengths to come to the fore, that being them going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, we said this before about the strikers, but the whole point of how you set your team up is to get the best, you know, get the players in the positions that they're best in doing the things that they're best at doing and kind of prevent them from doing the things that they're not so good at or, you know, their kind of deficiencies. And I think that's true of both Lewis and Andrews at various points this season. They've been far better going forward than they have going backwards. I think, you know, Lewis has copped a lot of flak recently anyway, but people have been fairly quick to say, actually, over the last two games, since he's been put into this wing-back role, he's been, you know, looked a lot more comfortable. Andrews had a particularly tough night, didn't he, against Leeds. Crescencio Somerville, you know, absolutely torched him over and over and over. I suspect if he was fit, that would probably been a good game for Jeremy Ngakia, given he's better in the opposite set, going the opposite direction. But he wouldn't have been such a good fit for the wing-back system. So, yeah, absolutely think it's the way to get the best out of those two. And I think it's a bit of a, you know, tip your cap to Tom Cleverley for being bold enough to try something different, because Ishmael, one thing we knew about him, if we knew nothing else before he came in and it kind of panned out that way, was that he is very kind of rigid in his thinking. It's how this is how we play. This is the system we use. And, you know, very little change wasn't there from him until right near the end when he kind of went to 4-2-3-1 for a couple of games. It was otherwise it was 4-3-3 and that was it. So I think it's a positive.
Mm. Jordan, what did you think? You think it's getting the best from our wing backs here?
Yeah, I think, you know, you kind of look at the two games that I think Andrews has done quite well. his ability to, you need mobility in that position, don't you? And he's someone that can definitely offer you that. I think especially the second half against West Brom, he was able to get involved more, get further forward. His average position was really high, which is good to see. You know, a lot of the play goes down the left so far, but he's going to be that natural width on the right-hand side. He's always going to offer you that. And he linked up with Dennis quite well on a few occasions as well. There was quite a lot of link-up play between those two. You know, Dennis drifting out to the right-hand side and looking for space in those wide positions. Andrews is even coming inside at points too and drifting in. With Lewis, I think real mixed bag for me. You know, he quite frustrating at times, I find him in the final third. You know, oftentimes he gets the ball at his feet and his first instinct is always to take a touch and turn back in field and, you know, kind of face towards his centre-backs again. And sometimes that can kill momentum. I think at times we need to be more direct, you know, kind of strike when we have the opportunity and try and make things happen. But he's got that kind of, he sometimes plays with that kind of over-cultured footballer possession style that you just can't always do. You can't always get away with it. And it almost reminds me of watching kind of under 21 football where everything's very safe and procedural at times. And he got better against West Brom when he did kind of shift and he was more direct and he started getting crossed into the box in that second half. Then we started to see kind of what he can do in four positions. He's actually got a decent left foot. So when he uses it, it's effective. And you know, I think Rajovic coming on maybe kind of gives you a little bit more emphasis that you kind of have to do so, because that's what we're going to thrive off. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to win the game. We're trying to score another goal. And, you know, he's someone that's going to capitalise on that cross into the box. That kind of helped. But yeah, before that, a little bit too negative at times.
Mm. It came as a real surprise. And I can only really talk about the Leeds game because I was there in person. I wasn't at the West Brom, but it really felt like it was one of the best performances I've seen from a Watford side this season, almost as though nothing previous that had come before existed anymore. And they went out there and really shocked a lot of us, I think, being forward thinking and that the players seem to really be enjoying playing under Cleverley.
Yeah. You know, what I will say too, though, is I think there's not been a ton, from what we can see from just watching the games, I don't see a ton of I don't feel like he's putting a lot of restriction on these players. It doesn't feel like there's a little bit more freedom, but it really shows, I think it's a good example of what the players, or what a difference the feeling of the players can make, the mentality of the players can make. Because I think they're playing with less structure, but less pressure in ways too. And even just the choice of pass is different. You know, there's more freedom to try things, and I think that's helping us, especially in the back three. We're not getting stuck at the wing backs. We're not kind of having to recycle the ball a lot. And a lot of that's because we're taking risks. You look at midfield, I think Tom Delibashiri has been arguably the best player in some ways since Cleverley's been in here and, you know, operating that deeper position. We've seen Livermore and Siri out of play. But he's playing there with confidence. He's using the ball well. And it's still relatively simplistic in what we're trying to do, but it's just looking a little bit more effective. And I think a lot of that has to do with how Tom's probably conducted himself for the team and kind of respect they have for him already, but also maybe dumbing it down is the wrong way to say it, but just allowing a little bit more freedom for those guys on the team to just to play through and do what they can do. You know, try to play to their instinct a little bit more and see what happens. But it's looked better, and I think you're right. It was one of the more positive ones, especially against Leeds, who can be a really dominant team.
Mm. Tom, is this more than just manager bounce, or are we seeing exactly that?
I think it's an interesting question. Actually, there probably is more than just manager bounce to it. As we said, you know, having the bravery, having the gumption, having the tactical awareness to try something different after a long season of playing the same system. You know, and we did see changes in the way they played, I guess, within periods under Ismail. You know, certainly the first few weeks were different to the last few weeks, were different to the middle kind of period as well. But I think for Cleverley at this stage, you can only kind of judge him on what we've seen so far, and it's been a marked difference. The Birmingham game, you know, as I said at the time, almost belonged to the Ismail era in terms of it being quite an attritional performance, and we just knew we had to get the win there by hook or by crook, and it was exactly that, and it was a, you know, big error that we capitalised on to win it. But these two games, it feels like he's really really kind of stamped his mark on the team. There was a marked difference. You know, that first 45 minutes certainly against Leeds was fantastic. And a lot of people have made the point, and I think it's a fair one, that it was kind of the best 45-minute display, certainly since the opening day of the season. And the kind of thread that connects those two is the intensity and the desire to get forward and move the ball quickly and attacking intent that we've not seen. I suspect it might have been somewhat different, however, had we not got the win at Birmingham. I suspect it might have been a bit edgier and it might have been a bit less, I don't know what the right word is, but, you know, certainly a bit more fraught and a bit more kind of, right, we have to get something, so we'll take a step back and play a bit more defensively. Might be wrong, but, you know, natural kind of inclination to protect what you have in those circumstances rather than going out to try and seek more, so to speak.
Mm. In both games, Jordan, we gave up late equalisers. Is that something to do with the players themselves, the ability that they have, fitness? What can we draw upon that gives us an answer to why that's been happening? Or is it just a case that we were up against good teams and good teams keep battling?
Well, I think a bit of both. I think in the Leeds situation, yes, I think there's, you know, the quality Leeds have did kind of shine through in the end, and it's tough. You know, I think that's a difficult situation. That those things happen, is you can't cut it out completely. And I'd have a bit of sympathy for how that came about. The West Brom one, to me though, I feel like it's a little bit different. I think, you know, we looked dramatically different off the ball when we changed the strikers. You know, when Dennis and Bayo came off, we lost a lot of work rate in the forward positions, a lot of off the ball work from those strikers, which is crucial to how we defend. You know, they are, in a sense, two of our most important defensive players, especially Bayo. But Dennis has that tenacity too. You know, we've seen how he can operate there when he's really going for it. And he was in this game. You know, he was useful. And once you kind of relinquish that threat of turnover in that third, then it gives West Brom a little bit more time. Martins didn't do particularly well in the equaliser either. You know, he's one that came on and should be fresh legged, but a little bit slow to close down to Furlong, and that, you know, obviously got a shot away. We're talking about fractions of a second, but you can just see the intent wasn't quite there. And I know Ravic got the goal, and we'll talk about that. I'm sure that was, you know, really good to see from him. I'm pleased for him, but we did lose an edge defensively, and a lot of that came from not being able to disrupt West Brom in their build up, making things a little bit too easy for them, and they started to grow into the game at a time where we really should have been able to capitalise. And honestly, a game that we undoubtedly should have won, in my opinion.
Mm. In the first game, it was a defence of Matty Pollock, Serauta and Porteous. Uhu, I think, had a very decent game. In the second game, Pollock was dropped for Hoot, who was out from the first game with a suspension. Not suggesting that Hoot shouldn't have come back in, but was Pollock the right choice to drop out? And how did both sets of defences do in each game?
I think they did really well. I think Pollock was unfortunate to be dropped. Having said that, I think Hoot's also really been our player of the season most likely this year, so I understand bringing him back in. And if one's going to go, then I guess Pollock's the kind of least senior, so I understand it. But I think I thought they were really, really good. You know, I think Porteous has been really good. I've been critical of Porteous, as have many, but I think he's done really well there. He's taken on there's more defensive responsibility for him, and he's kind of come through, and I'm pleased for him. But yeah, no, it's been good actually, and I think that centre back is not a position that we'd necessarily say is overly strong for us, but in this system, at how we've been operating, I think it's looking like a strong suit. I think Siriata was a little bit off it against West Brom. Obviously, we know there's that early mistake he made. We kind of trod on the ball, which happens. You know, it's just one of those things where he turned and it kind of hit his standing foot a little bit, and it almost cost us a goal. But in the next game, it wouldn't surprise me if you saw Pollock in for Siriata. I think that if it's a kind of a centre-back by committee situation, and if there's you know, poor performance, you've got someone waiting in the wings, then we can make the most of that. Because I think the two games we've seen against Leeds and West Brom have been really, that's probably been the arguably one of the most, if not the most positive aspects of the game, has been that defensive trio.
Almost an almighty cock up, wasn't it? Receiving the ball from Backman and getting robbed by Thomas Asante. I think he's, I think he's someone probably that benefits from being in a three. And Jordan, I'm interested what you think about this, given his kind of size and lack of mobility. The drawback is, and obviously that issue, that era wasn't kind of an issue of this. The drawback is certainly in Pollock and certainly in Hoop, you don't have the most mobile partners next to him either. So you are going to end up in situations where he kind of looks uncomfortable. And I thought there were a few occasions against West Brom, and certainly when the goals came from this, where the whole back line or two thirds of the back three looked pretty flat footed and kind of got caught on the turn. And I wonder if let's play kind of devil's advocate, looking into our crystal ball, if Tom Cleverley gets the job, and if this is how he wants to play next season, it will be interesting to see if it's the same personnel or if it's different personnel. Because I think, you know, they're quite similar and they have similar drawbacks, a few of them, it's fair to say.
What, Pollock and Trouter? Or Porteous as well?
And Hoot to some extent as well. I think Hoot's better. He's a classy operator and overall better player. And I was actually thinking about this when I was walking earlier. There's a pod earlier in the season where I said, I think Jake Livermore's in with a really good shout to be player of the year. But I think given everything, it will end up being Hoot, and I've got nothing wrong with that. He's been brilliant. But yeah, he's got some of those fallibilities in him as well, I think, similar kind of fallibilities about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think from a squad building perspective, I think that it's attainable to utilise these players that we have in a back three consistently. I think the thing is you have to have that in mind when it comes to your recruitment. You have to compensate in areas, whether it's your wing backs, whether it's your centre midfielders, how you operate with those midfielders around the centre backs, how you support them. If you game plan it enough and you commit to that strategy, then you can cope with having players that, you know, maybe aren't the most mobile. The easiest, if you were just talking about like what getting a formation in quickly and players being able to adapt to it, obviously in the ideal world, the quickest way to do so is you have a centre back, a central centre back, like, you know, more direct the Pollocks, the Sirianni potentially, and you've got that more mobility in the outside position. That's just kind of an easy entry into that shape. But I don't think it has to be that way. It's just if it's not going to be that way, then it has to be really something you're prepared for in other positions as well, which most teams, especially teams like Watford in how we operate recruitment wise, aren't going to be so committed to that or have that foresight to do so. That would be my concern. I think this team is capable of doing it with a couple of additions, but are we committed to this strategy long term? I don't think we're really looking at that in that capacity just yet.
The strategy of Cleverley being the man in charge.
Sorry, in terms of, you know, having a coach that's looking to play the back three or a back five, right. Look at it. You know, if you say, okay, we've got these assets at centre back, and maybe add, you know, another left footed player, give us some support, maybe even two. Okay, well, if we've got some guys that have these attributes, they have these traits, what do we have to do to utilise them, get the most out of them and also support them? Then you might be saying, okay, we've got to do something a little bit different in central midfield, how we structure our midfield or how we structure the fullbacks, how we play. That's something you've got to be a little bit more cognizant of than if you just have pacey outside centre-backs. They're a little bit more plug and play. You can switch around, you can throw them in. They're gonna cover a lot of the cracks, but we also don't have that luxury. So if I get what Tom's asking correctly there, then that kind of a case of, are these guys able to do this long term, kind of next season as well? I think they could, but we might see more issues unless we really kind of game plan this and look at ways to make it work more effectively for longer periods of time. And that's where I start to have questions.
Mm. I think you're right though, Tom. Three of the four centre backs we have prefer playing in a three, which, you know, makes me feel like that's the right answer, because if that's the best way to get the best out of them, then that should be the way forward. But who's to say that some other centre-backs don't come in?
I think one thing as well we have to consider as well with this is that I think Tom was quite good at, I wouldn't put it past Cleverley to have gone into these two games so close together with the back three and really limit the time both teams have to prepare for this. You know, it's... Let's see how this back three, if they continue with the back three, I'll be curious to see how it looks in a few games' time, to see if we start to see the issues arise. Because, you know, coming into the Leeds game, it would have been tough for them to prepare fully for how we're going to play. And even West Brom, there's a short turnaround there too. They've probably got limited prep time as well. And I know, obviously, other teams play with the back three. It's not the most unique thing in the world. But, let's see how it looks in a few games, start to see if we have any differences in possession, and you know, if teams are maybe a little bit more prepared, we might see us change shape. We might have a little bit of a different opinion potentially.
Jordan, you spoke earlier about the role of Tom Dele-Bashiru and what he's been adding to the team and why he's looked so good. Can you explain a bit more about how he's been sort of, continuing the movement by getting the ball into the likes of Kone and Kiembe and allowing them to find the likes of Lewis and Andrews who are sort of running past them, and what Tom Dele's doing in that movement in particular during the pressure that we've been putting on the opposition.
Yeah, I think when it comes to back three, and then we're talking about back threes again, one of the biggest things is how do you progress the ball? That's where it's always going to fall apart offensively when you're in possession. And you know, one of the keys there is to have someone that can move laterally across that back line and just kind of, you know, sit in between those positions and allow himself to be an option. Whether he's used or not, he needs to be in the correct position to give you lanes, open channels of possession. And you kind of can't really get, I mean, Jake Livermore might be capable of doing that in some regards, but if you have that extra half a second, extra second or two in that mobility to get into that spot quicker, you can move the ball, you can play through there. It doesn't hurt that he's looked really confident in possession. You know, under Ismail, there were a few times he came in and he was playing in the eight, wasn't he? More advanced role, obviously right back. Possession, he looks a little bit less confident in possession, but seeing him drop into this deeper role, he looks quite confident there, quite happy there to move the ball. And as you say, he's finding Kone, he's finding Kiembe, but he's not opposed to getting forward a bit too. He's got the ability to get forward. So he doesn't kind of have to play as a, you know, an anchor that's kind of just holding that position and can spring things. He can actually get involved. He can get forward. If he does, you know, Kiembe can drop in deeper. There's also a little bit more flexibility for Kiembe and Kone to come deeper and sit alongside him and play from those positions also, which you kind of have to have that flexibility too. So yeah, he's done a really, really good job. And then defensively, obviously, he's quite mobile. He's able to get involved. He's not going to be winning the challenges the same way that Livermore does, but he's enough of an irritant in midfield to stop players or to stop teams kind of playing through the midfield area easily without pressure. So you know, he's one that you look at and you wonder why potentially he wasn't tried by Ismail at points during his tenure.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tom, we've spoken about the 3-5-2 and we looked particularly at the three. But let's go to the other side of that now, and the two, which has been one of the big differences for Watford in the last few games. Playing with a two, it looks like Bayo and Dennis have been sort of the preferred option, but then we've seen Rajovic getting on as well and what he adds. Let's have a little discussion about Watford with two up front.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been arguably the biggest win out of all of it, I think, hasn't it? That, you know, it's been said ad nauseum that if you combined Vakoum Bayo and Mileta Rajovic, you might have one serviceable striker. And we've still obviously not put them together. And I don't think that is the answer in itself. But putting one of them, at least with Emmanuel Dennis, has gone some way to answering that question. I don't know if we've got the full 25 marks on the exam paper, but it's a significant improvement, isn't it? Dennis, it'll be really interesting to see how the reflection, you know, how people reflect on Dennis's second spell here, because he has scored goals, and he scored a couple of important goals, or reasonably important goals, obviously not least the Birmingham goal, and goals that, as we've said, you know, the other strikers wouldn't score. But I think Bayo gets a bit of a harsh kind of, you know, people kind of are a bit harsh on Bayo at times, and have been over the course of the season, because he may not be prolific, and he isn't prolific. That was his seventh goal of the season against Leeds. Decent finish as well, to be fair, kind of coming at him quite quickly, angle diminishing and so on. But I think he does do something that I'm jumping around a bit here, but I think the things that Rajovic doesn't do kind of give you an appreciation of when Bayo does do them and uses his body and runs the channels and, you know, links the play. He's not brilliant at any of those things, but he's serviceable. And I think that's the difference. So putting him with Dennis, I think you have two players with very different skill sets, but they kind of benefit from the other one's presence. And I suspect it would probably be the same if you put Rajovic and Dennis together as well. In that Dennis will run the channels, not, you know, in a selfless way, but he'll get out there if he needs to get out there to make something happen. He will do things that, you know, Rajovic could probably only do on a PlayStation. And Rajovic has got a little bit more kind of clinical, you know, Johnny on the spot, demonstrated by his goal against West Brom, about him. So, yeah, I think it's been interesting. I think it'd be interesting to see how it kind of plays out, as Jordan rightly said. Just because Cleverley's kind of played these two games with used a 3-5-2 in these two games doesn't mean that that's necessarily going to be the case, that Cleverley uses this system for the rest of the season, and therefore it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, I think playing two up front, a lot of people have called for it and give them credit. It wasn't something that I was necessarily crying out for. My solution to the issue was to try and diminish the role of that kind of line leader, that number nine, and get the wingers more involved, but kind of existing to service the number nine. But this is another solution, and on the basis of these two games, it looks like an improvement, and it's probably, hopefully at least, just an improvement to get us through until the end of the season, and we sign, you know, someone that fits the profile of the coach that takes the charge next season, which would be a novelty.
What have you made of the two up front, Jordan?
Yeah, I think it's been good. I think having it's obviously changed quite a lot depending on who's behind them too. We've seen Espria in there as well, which, you know, obviously played a part in the West Brom game too. You've got options. You know, I think Bayo, he does lack a little at times in the striking sense, but he does offer you a lot off the ball. I think his link-up play is quite good. He's quite tenacious. He works hard. He offers a lot. And I think at a team that's not doing particularly well, he's even more important for us. But, you know, Dennis has been very hit or miss. His loan spell has been very hit or miss. And against Leeds, obviously, and West Brom, we got to see some positive moments for him and really what he can do for us. And I think it's good. I'm pleased for him. I'm pleased that we've been able to see some of that, because it looked like it was going in a poor direction. But he's a very unique player too. But he offers you width, flexibility. You know, you want to have players that can still occupy those wide positions, because the team's going to need it at times. You might have Andrews and Lewis, but you need additional help in those positions at on occasion too, and he's able to do that for you. So it gives you flexibility, I think, especially if you haven't got anyone that's got that complete list of tools at their disposal that they can use in that striker spot. You can at least have two guys that offer that as a combination. You know, Dennis gives you that width. You've got someone in the central position like Rajovic even that can be there at the right time. And it allows you to create opportunities and capitalize on chances that you maybe wouldn't do had you just had that kind of singular option that we have. It doesn't really tick all those boxes. So it's interesting. I'm curious to see where we go now in the next game, obviously. I think, did Rajovic earn a start? Are we back in that cycle of, you know, Rajovic scores, he starts the next game, and then we're kind of back to that? I'm not quite sure, but I'm interested to see what we do with it if we continue.
Mm. Little note on Dennis. He's scored 4 now in 12 games. So it's basically every 3 games he scores a goal. When he was in the Premier League, he was also 1 goal in every 3. So he's kind of matched that. The only thing he hasn't matched is the assists. He hasn't made any assists yet, where he, I think he did 6 or 7 in the Premier League. So he needs to bring that back into his game. But, you know, maybe he's been working too hard on his flips to worry about playing one in. But, you know,
still carrying an injury, though. That's one thing to keep an eye on with him.
Mm. Yeah, he is, isn't he? And he came off against Leeds and indeed against West Brom as well.
West Brom as well. Yeah, he did. And it's still bothering him. You can see he's not quite fit. So, yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. I think we were questioning whether he'd even be fit for the West Brom game. He obviously started. But, yeah, I'm sure he's desperate for that break.
Personally, because I'm a bit of an old school guy, and I feel as though Watford have, you know, got their safety now. They're not going to get relegated. They're also not going to get promoted either, in that kind of not really happy area where we don't really have much to play for. But I think that's the time where you stop playing loan players, because they're not going to be around next season, and instead just develop the players that are going to be here next season. So for me, that would mean bringing Morris in, bringing Rajovic in on a more permanent basis, and just you know, playing the loanies when they're needed to, you know, give the other guys a rest, basically.
Oh, I'd definitely give them, you know, kind of the advantage in that respect. But I suspect from his point of view, he wants to give the best account of himself possible and try and, if, you know, if he's got ambitions of getting the job full time, he will put the best team on the field for any given match.
Now, I think there's also maybe a sell on percentage aspect of Dennis too. It's probably in their interest that he has a bit of a shop window end to the season, and, you know, maybe that benefits Watford a bit down the line financially as well. So maybe that's, from the owner perspective, that might be playing a part in his rating of whether Dennis plays or not.
That's a good point. I hadn't considered that Watford, of course, will get a sell on from his sale from Nottingham Forest. So there is that incentive, isn't there? I mean, I've got no idea what it could be, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a factor, right?
You'd think the Potters would have put something.
Yeah, it's likely. I think it was reported at the time. I might be wrong, but I think it was reported at the time that there was a sell-on percentage. So we don't know what that is or how significant it is, but clearly we're at a time financially where we need kind of everything we can. So, yeah, wouldn't rule that out as being a factor in why the loan was facilitated in the first place, but also... And not to say that he's going to be forced to play him, but I'm sure Gino would probably rather he plays and does well than not.
Hmm. Going to the other end of the formation then, Dan Backman has been a consistent since Tom Cleverley's been in the position, and he's got some good reviews and also some not so good reviews. Where are we coming down on this one? Tom, you're obviously in camp, Dan. So why don't you start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. It's become such a thing now, hasn't it, Dan Backman? Obviously, it's not been a good season overall for him. But I'm really struggling to attach much blame to him for the Thomas Asante goal against West Brom, which seems to be the one that really you know, got people's backs up, because it's the near post. And look, I always think it's difficult. I'm not a goalkeeper. You know, goalkeeping is a very particular art, so to speak. I think there are a lot of bad pundits and lazy punditry out there when it comes to goalkeepers, and I don't want to be part of that. But my view on that one is very much that he's just not expecting. He can't be expected to anticipate that shot coming in at the near post in the way it does, because as I said earlier, Hoot and Sierra Alta, is it, who get, you know, very much caught out, you know, caught flat-footed, and he nips into that gap, and it happens again, I think, shortly after, if I remember rightly, and Hoot makes a good sliding tackle to stop him. Hoot and Porteous, wasn't it, who got, I'm just looking at my notes here, who got caught flat-footed. And just think, as soon as a goal goes in at the near post, the default thing is for everyone to throw their arms up in the air and go, oh, he's got to do better. But I don't think that's always the case with a goalkeeper. It's very hard to cover the near post without leaving yourself kind of vulnerable in the rest of the goal, and vice versa. So personally, I didn't think that was a one that was a glaring error. Would he like to have stopped it? Of course, but I don't think you can pin anything on him. I don't think his distribution was perfect either in these games, but we know that about him, and he made some, you know, some really quite decent saves as well. Certainly in the Leeds game, there was a save from Somerville, wasn't there, which would have been probably a lower but virtually identical goal to the goal that he did score. He made a decent save with his feet from someone as well, didn't he? Anthony, wasn't it, after he again saved from Somerville. So I think he's certainly, if we just take these two games, he's in credit for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, in the West Brom game is where he got the most criticism. But if it wasn't for him saving Sorauta's neck after Sorauta gave the ball away, off of a pass from Backman that I felt was more than capable of him being able to control and move on. But, you know, he just messed it up, didn't he? And then Backman made the save that he probably shouldn't have been expected to save at that point. So, you know, he's in credit from that. Should he have done better from the near post? Possibly. But, I mean, it was hit with real venom as well. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, near post one was tough. There was a lot of power. There was maybe even a slight deflection of the shot as well. That one, I think you can't really give Batman to. Most keepers would probably concede that. I feel like that was a really good effort. But second one, there's, you know, the Furlong's one, I agree. There was some... How do you feel on Furlong's? Is that something you think is justified?
It's hard. I have looked at it back, and I think, does it swerve maybe? I don't know. I'm trying to help him out here, but maybe he could have done better at that one. But then, you know, if he saves that one doesn't save the one from Sorauta's miss, then the result's still the same.
I just think people just have to... I think with Backman, he's not a top goal... I just don't see him as being a goalkeeper that we're going to view as a top goalkeeper, at least not at this point. And you're going to get ups and downs from him every game, most likely. I think this conversation persists so much because that's just the player he is. I'm not trying to be harsh on Backman, but, you know, you're going to have moments where he does pull off good saves, but you're also going to have those moments where, you know, you're questioning things. And I think that's kind of where we are with him.
Who would you have out of him and Hamer, out of interest? Hamer, for me, didn't make any mistakes whilst he was...
No, I think...
In his run.
I think I would probably lean with Hamer, but I think the issue is they're most likely going to have Backman around next year, so there is an incentive to play him now and try and maybe get over that real... I think he's had a real confidence slump. You know, him coming back in, him being overly proactive at times and leading to mistakes, and, you know, you could see the change in his game. He was trying to kind of... He was trying to address the issues in a positive way, but I think it just kind of exposed the fragility that he's playing with mentally right now, which is tough. It's obviously, there's so much pressure in that position. There's so much pressure on him with everything surrounding him. I think just giving him the opportunity is the best they can do. And, you know, as I said, I think Backman's going to be here next year and Hamer possibly isn't. So they're probably going to go with that.
I wouldn't be surprised if both are here, to be honest, because I imagine Hamer's probably on a cheapish deal and has proven that he can step in. And Backman's got that 5-year contract, so he's not going anywhere, is he?
Akoi was Akoi permanent to Udinese? He was, wasn't he?
I thought it was. Was it? Was it?
Either way, he's been playing, so he's probably going to stay, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure. He's suddenly been playing, hasn't he? And people have been piping up about that, having absolutely buried him earlier in his stay. But yeah, I've got a feeling it was a permanent move in the end.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's most likely to be back. I don't see us going out. We've got so many positions we're going to have to address in the summer if we have a contracted keeper and a backup keeper. I think even though a lot of people want us to address it, I get the impression that unless something came about, we most likely won't.
Tom Cleverley was very effusive in his praise of Rajovic after the goal at West Brom, which I thought was clever and was interesting. And I'll just read you the quotes very quickly that came out via the club. He said, "I've been really impressed with Millie since I came in. Really impressed. He's had me and my staff after two or three days raising eyebrows because he's definitely got something to add and wants to stay behind every day and make himself better. You've got to rip him off the training ground. If someone wants to improve themselves and play for the club with heart like he does, he'll do for me." I think that was really interesting, really clever from Tom. And the reason I say that is it doesn't really say anything except professional footballer works hard and wants to train hard and play for this club. But I think it's enough, coupled with the goal, that people will take that and say, oh, you know, great attitude, right attitude. Tom Cleverley likes him, and cut him a little bit of slack. I think at the end of his first season, you know, if you can only take one thing from him, is that he's got that goal-scoring nous. And we've seen plenty of players that do other things that haven't got that goal-scoring nous and cost a lot more and earned a lot more. So I think there's something that will potentially, you know, be given somebody there who will potentially be given an opportunity to be continually developed. And it will be interesting to see what he does with a kind of full, whoever's in charge of this is, I should say, with a full pre-season behind him, because I think that's a big factor as well. So, yeah, I think he's someone that will benefit. Just to revert to your question, Matt, from earlier, being part of a two potentially, but also someone who there's the kind of raw ingredients there to work with. Is he ever going to be a brilliant championship striker? Probably not. Is he ever going to be a brilliant all-round striker? Probably not. Is there some room for some level of development and to get some use out of him in there? Yeah, I think so, possibly.
Yeah, and what I will say as well is, you know, it's good to hear those aspects of his personality. And that's kind of been talked about. He seems like a good character from everything we kind of heard prior to him signing and after he signed. But, you know, there are elements of his game. The build-up still looks a little bit sloppy. I think it's still tough for him. It's still a big jump for him level-wise. But, you know, I've said this before. For me, if he can carry that application, that effort that he's putting into training and so on, you know, over into off season, if they can get him some really good physical coaching off season, you could see a big difference in him as a player. Because yeah, it's not going to improve his technical ability, it's not going to improve his link up play, but if he can improve his athleticism even 10-15-20% in certain situations, that'll make a big difference to him as a player, because he can offer you more off the ball, he can offer you more on the ball too in terms of retention, ability to kind of dominate defenders and so on. He could be a different player if he just added some athletic elements to his game, which right now he's lacking. But, you know, in his defence, he's also not had those tools at his disposal at the clubs he's playing at. He probably didn't have the same assets available. So if they can really help him in this kind of off-season, then there is potential that he comes back a better player, I think.
Do you think he's one that prefers working in a two?
I think whatever just gets him the ball at his feet in the box the most, really. You know, I think his play is not centred around anything but scoring goals. That's where he thrives. That's where you need him. And I don't think that's going to change for him. I don't see much to suggest that would change for him at any point. So maybe he prefers playing in a two more, because he might get a few more opportunities potentially. And you may maybe promotes a little bit more kind of wing play if you've got those kind of pushing on wing backs to kind of get the ball in a little bit quicker. That might benefit him, but as I said, I think anything that gets the ball to him in the box is what he wants.
Okay. We've played Leeds and Leicester recently. Ipswich was a little while ago now. But who do you think are going to be the two that go up automatically this season from what you've seen?
Yeah, good question. Let me just look at the Championship table to see. I know Ipswich are top, but just to see what the kind of lie of the land is. The thing is, and I put this in my notes, a lot of the teams at the moment, right at the bottom of my notes, a lot of those teams at the moment around in the top however many are all kind of faltering, aren't they, one way or another? Obviously, we know that Leicester have had a bit of a falter. Leeds, the exception, I suppose, but Ipswich, I guess, as well. So I would like to see Ipswich go up. But I think it will be Leeds and Leicester, even if Leicester have tripped up lately.
I think Ipswich and Leicester personally. I think I mean, I feel like I'm closer to Ipswich in the sense that I have a lot of Ipswich fan friends. But, yeah, I don't know. I just got the feeling that Ipswich will do it this year. And I think Leicester are going to, even though, as you said there, Tim, they did have slipped up a few times, I think they're just going to have enough to get over the line. But I do question whoever finishes third, I do worry for in the playoffs, though.
In terms of the kind of mental aspect of missing out and
just the gut punch. Yeah,
it's hard, isn't it?
The gut punch is terrible. Yeah, I don't know how you, when you're in touching distance of such, of something so big and you've worked so hard for it, I just think it's really hard to re-rally and apply yourself to the same degree. You've been, the mental stress and strain of competing for a title to then go into to a set of knockout games, I think it takes an immense amount. I think that's so often what makes them trip in those moments, what makes it hard. It made it incredibly hard for us in the end as well.
And how about the teams loitering outside the playoffs? Who do you think will finish inside? Leicester currently are surely guaranteed it. Southampton probably as well. So I think it's between West Brom, Norwich, Coventry, Preston, Hull you could chuck in there as well. Possibly Middlesbrough, that they have got a game played more than everyone else. But yeah, between those ones, I suppose that are going to get the fifth and sixth.
Again, I would love to see Coventry get in just because I think it's such a great story and what they've done over the last few years and obviously losing in the final last season. And they're by far, of course, the closest, only 4 points off. But I think they're all kind of playing for that one spot, really, aren't they? Which is the sixth spot that Norwich occupy at the moment. So, yeah, if I had to put my money on it at the moment, I reckon I would probably stick with Norwich being able to hold on to that sixth spot with a 4 point get advantage without knowing any of their fixtures, I must admit.
I would like to see a Norwich Ipswich playoff final too. That would be quite
good. Yeah, that'd be a bit interesting, wouldn't it?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you one of their fixtures is Preston versus Watford this Saturday. It's going to be a difficult one because, like we said, Preston are in the hunt and they want to get that sixth place for themselves. But Tom Cleverley currently hasn't had a defeat yet. And, you know, from what we've seen, it feels as though they're going to be a strong side on Saturday.
Yeah, tough one. It's pretty renowned how tough our fixtures are. But it's another one that's going to be competitive at least, which we don't have anything to play for, at least I want to see us playing other teams that do. I'm curious to see how it pans out, but I'm interested. I think it's another good test for us, definitely.
We obviously thrashed them up at theirs, didn't we? Against all kind of expectation in December. I remember that one clearly because I was out on the piss in St Albans and I was very surprised by that scoreline. but they've been quite good lately. They've only lost two of their two of their last 10. Something like that, and have been quite decent on the road as well. Picked up wins at Cardiff, Coventry, Plymouth, but then they went and lost to Birmingham, and we obviously went up there and won. And we know how average they can be. So I think it's an important game because even if we've got nothing to play for on the face of it, and we've got no expectation of getting in the playoff, kind of even in the scrap, let alone actually into the playoffs. Players are playing for opportunities. Tom Cleverley is auditioning, as Jordan said and kind of tweeted. It's a job interview situation for him. And if we draw two and then lose that one, then suddenly the kind of lens that you look at it all through isn't as optimistic or positive as if we go and get a win and continue that unbeaten run that you rightly pointed out, Ron, within Matt. So, yeah, it's another big game for us, and it would just be good to get that monkey off our backs as well, by the way, in terms of a win at home. We've not won at home for 4 months, have we? Which is absolutely and utterly miserable. So we really need to get that sorted out, if nothing else.
Line-up prediction?
I don't see why he'd change it, to be honest with you. Unless there's anyone missing, I would go with the same team. Well, anyone newly unavailable.
Yeah. So the team that faced
West Brom.
West Brom, yeah. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Fair enough. good stuff. Well, I hope you've enjoyed that. Two games, two very interesting games to talk about. And the Tom Cleverley train keeps on rolling. Hopefully, he'll do enough to get the top spot on a more consistent level. Because I think it would just be lovely, wouldn't it, to have a Tom Cleverley in charge from the start of next season. We'll see. But so far, not doing his chances any harm at all from what we've seen, which is really good. We'll be next talking, I imagine, next week about that Preston game. If you want to check us out on Twitter, if you haven't done so already, you can follow us at Watford Pod, at Messi Messiano, at Jordan Wymer, at TB Bedell. Please do give us a rating as well. We'd very much like that. If you're a new listener or if you're an old listener and you haven't ever rated us before, please go along to iTunes, type in Watford Buzz Podcast down to the bottom and give us a rating out of 5. Really helps to get our podcast up towards the top end, and then people will find us and more people can join and listen and enjoy the dribble that we put out on a regular basis. Other than that, I hope you had a great Easter, and we'll chat back in next week. But from us, we've been the Watford Buzz. We'll see you later. Bye bye.
See you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.